It's a Monday finish in a major. Richard Bland comes out on top at Newport Country Club in the US Senior Open. In extra holes, we'll show you how he got it done in dramatic fashion. And over on the PGA Tour, Cam Davis left with a trophy at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. A few other guys, they just left with regrets. We're going to convene a roundtable to announce the cheers and jeers from Detroit. And have you ever made a hole-in-one? How about aces on consecutive holes? How about aces in consecutive holes in a tournament? Better yet, in a major tournament. Only one man in the history of the game checks all those boxes, and he's here with us as Golf Today gets underway right now.
Golf Today.
Well, hi and welcome. First day of July, summer proper. Jimmy Roberts sitting in alongside Eamon Lynch. Apparently, I guess the requirements for entry in this room are not very high, huh?
For either one of us. True.
What a weekend, huh?
It really was. There's so much drama out there. And for every guy who leaves with a trophy, we always know there are a bunch more who leave with a sense of what might have been. That feeling's now extended to Mondays as well as Sundays. Let's continue this conversation with the Golf Today roundtable as we welcome in the yin and yang of Golf Channel senior writers Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. Rex, I want to start with you. Yesterday just seemed to be a microcosm of golf because Cam Davis isn't in the top 120 in any major statistical category on tour. Akshay Bhatia is playing great. The guy that you'd expect to leave with a trophy doesn't. The guy who you didn't expect is heading home a little bit disappointed. Do you think Bhatia leaves Detroit feeling more positive than he perhaps looked there in the immediate aftermath of that? Because in general terms, it was a pretty good week for him.
It really was. Now, I don't think he probably thinks it's positive right now. If you give him a day or maybe even a couple of days to get over it, he's going to look back and think about everything he was able to accomplish, everything he did. He had one three-putt all week long. It came at a terrible time on the 72nd hole, and he ended up losing for the second consecutive week. But if you go to 30,000 feet, which I think he's pretty good at, especially for someone of his age, I think he's going to look back as another stepping stone towards something that's bigger and better. If you look at how his game has trended, he's become more consistent, as you pointed out, in almost every statistical category. He continues to put himself into contention. I think he's probably got wise heads around him, and they're going to convince him that this is a good move in the right direction.
Ryan, let's talk Cam Young for a moment here. There seems to be a habit here of Cam Young coming up short on Sundays. And if you actually look at his scoring average on the PGA Tour, on Thursday and Friday's rounds, he ranks 50th and 27th on tour, and yet he's 147th in scoring average on Sundays. Is this a habit it's time to start getting worried about?
Oh, Eamon, I think we're long past the time that it's time to start worrying about Cameron Young and his continued inability to win a PGA Tour event. What's always struck me, though, has been very interesting. In the seven times that he has been a runner-up on the PGA Tour, which is the most of any player who has not won on the Tour since the Tour started keeping records of this in 1983, is that Cameron Young has never shot worse than 70 in those final rounds. So essentially, he's just getting beat in those final rounds. But that can really start to grate on you. The belief of, oh, is this going to happen again every time that he misses a tee shot or some putts don't drop or some of the bad breaks start to add up. But I think that's some of the boiling frustration that we saw Sunday at Detroit Golf Club. That, you know, is this really going to happen again? And so when I think about Cameron Young, I see glimpses of other players who have struggled with this very affliction in the past. I think back to Wyndham Clark, who was an NCAA Player of the Year, got out on the PGA Tour, was incredibly frustrated, and was really getting in his own way and unable to access the next level. I think about Justin Thomas, another son of a PGA professional who can be insanely hard on himself to the point where you just kind of want to shake the player and be like, relax, like you're an amazing talent, just let it come through. What those two players have in common, though, is that they've both hooked up with Julia Elion to help sort of get over that mental obstacle, to sort of be kinder to themselves. They're not changed personalities. They're not all of a sudden fixed. But those two players in particular now have at least the tools to diffuse what can be a pretty nasty bomb inside the ropes.
Eamon, I'm going to go with a rhetorical question here and ask you rhetorically, Did it look like Cam Young was having fun on Sunday at that championship? And the answer is obviously not. And this goes to the idea that if you'd never watched golf before and you just tuned in and you didn't know what you were seeing, and you watched Cam Young play those 18 holes, you would have thought he was being held against his will because he just doesn't look like he's having a good time on the golf course. And this isn't new. Like, all right, you can point to moments on Sunday when he cracked his driver and he didn't make a putt and he made some mental errors. Those things are all expected, but it seems to me he's getting in his own way. They talked about this at length on the telecast, the idea that he does all the right things. If you look at him statistically, he is a ball-striking robot. There's no reason why he hasn't won on the PGA Tour. It has to be something is holding him back mentally. And to Lav's point, he needs someone on his side to convince him that he needs to enjoy himself, that you're out there playing a game. I go back to Scottie Scheffler at the U.S. Open a few weeks ago on Friday. He had thought he'd missed the cut at the U.S. Open. That golf course was clearly beating him up. But while I was interviewing him, he used the word fun to describe the number two course, not once, but twice. And I finally came back with him with the idea that, did you have fun today? And he shook his head. No, absolutely not. I didn't have fun. But I can have fun in the idea that it's challenging golf, and that's what I want to do for a living.
Listen, because I'm sitting next to Eamon here, let me just play contrarian because it's a familiar tack to take here. But, you know, we've seen players before who have not looked like they're having fun. We've seen a number one player in the world. David Duval was as stone-faced as they got. I say different strokes for different folks, but I do agree with you. It's entirely possible that this could be some type of a, you know, of a mental roadblock for him. And I think it's ironic, Rex, that the guy who won talked about how he had leaned on what, hypnotherapy to help him get this done?
No, I think there's definitely something there. And look, I keep going back to the idea that he's plenty talented enough. We've been talking about Cam Young now for 3 or 4 years. The idea that he has all the tools, there's nothing he's missing. So the only thing, when you look at the stats that Eamon just laid out, when you look at scoring averages, and I've talked with enough sports psychologists to tell you that it's what you do when you're under pressure that matters the most, not what you do on the first hole on Thursday when nothing feels like it's out of the ordinary. He can take that step. We've seen it. Wyndham Clark is a great example. He just hasn't done it yet.
Ryan, let's change tack here a little bit. What are you more concerned about? The fact that Ricky Fowler has done nothing since winning this tournament a year ago, or Will Zalatoris having to withdraw over the weekend with a recurrence of back issue that has been some matter of concern over the last couple of years?
Well, this is going to sound like a cop-out, but I think both cases are probably equally concerning in their own way. I did talk to Will Zalatoris earlier today. It was actually a hip issue that popped up, not the back issue that the PGA Tour Communications Department initially put out there. He said that he's good to go after the hip scare, no change in his schedule, was just trying to be precautious. When you look long-term at Will Zalatoris' 2024 season, no, he's in a little bit of a rough patch right now, 7 consecutive finishes outside the top 40, but he's still 38th in FedEx Cup points. I think it's easy to envision a scenario where he'd love to stay inside that top 50, secure his status for the signature events in 2025, and take the rest of the fall to maybe get competitively sharp, but also try and make sure that his body is in top form for next year. Ricky Fowler, though, is certainly a more concerning case for me. He's 93rd in points, has not played well at all, just 2 top 25 finishes. He's 155th in strokes gained total. As much as Ricky wants to talk about how his putter has really let him down, it's definitely been his ball striking, and it's been a complete issue from driving all the way down to his iron play. And we've spent a lot of time on this show this year sort of hand-wringing about the sponsor exemption issue into the signature events. You can only imagine the number of sponsor exemptions that Ricky Fowler would get in 2025 if he's unable to crack that top 50 and get into the signature events. That's a long way to go because right now Ricky has more pressing issues, but it's something to look forward to as well as the calendar sort of winds down for the season.
Well, we've got a lot more to talk about in this roundtable, including a new boss announced at that other governing body on the other side of the pond. We're going to be right back with more on that.
Well, the countdown is on for the fourth and final men's major championship of 2024. The 152nd Open heads back to Royal Troon July 18th through the 21st. Last time we were there, what a show we got from Stenson and Mickelson.
And the RNA has a new chief executive. Mark Darbin has been appointed to succeed Martin Slumbers. He took over the job in November. And he released a statement earlier today talking about his excitement at taking up this position. He said, "I am thrilled and honoured to be taking up these positions with the RNA and the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St Andrews, which he will also serve as secretary, and to be moving into golf, a sport I've always loved. The RNA is globally renowned as an organisation, does so much to ensure that golf prospers from grassroots through to the professional game. I'm looking forward to working with a hugely talented team of staff, the club membership, and such an impressive array of partner organisations to achieve even more success in the years to come." Let's welcome back in Rex and Ryan to join us in discussing this. Rex, what do you think are the main challenges that Mark Darbin is going to have on his desk when he sits down in November?
I think this goes directly to what Martin Slumbers did really, really well during his tenure atop that organization. And I read a quote this morning that kind of stuck with me. It reflects history in a modern way. And by that, I mean, it has ancient in the name. And so obviously you're going to have to walk a fine line between old and new and trying to interject new energy into this organization. But he was able to maximize revenue, specifically at the Open Championship. And Mark Lawrie, who is in charge of all RNA activities in Central and South America, he was telling me at the Players' Championship earlier this year about how those revenues go directly to each country's organization, trying to grow the game that way in an organic manner. I think that's what you're going to see from the new leadership. That's what you have to see from the new leadership. It cannot be just about golf anymore. It cannot be just about the rules of golf anymore. These are large organizations, they're businesses, and they need to be run that way. And it seems to me that's the way they went with this new hire.
Yeah, and keep in mind that Martin Slumbers had a very difficult hand that he was dealt, dealing with sort of dueling crises with both COVID and then the arrival of LIV Golf and all that that sort of meant for the professional landscape. And Martin Slumbers, to your point, Rex, had a background in commerce and banking, helping develop the commercial side of the RNA like never before, growing the revenue of the Open Championship. That's something that the new leader is going to have to build upon, and as well as making sure that there's this seamless transition. I think in 20, 30 years, Martin Slumbers' legacy is going to be defined by this implementation of the golf ball rollback and what that means at not just the professional level, but the recreational level as well. Making sure that we get to a point that that's a seamless transition in 2028 and 2030 is going to be a top priority for sure.
Interesting time in golf leadership. Keith Pelley leaving the DP Tour, Seth Waugh leaving the PGA of America, now Martin Slumbers leaving the RNA. All right, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about LIV, because that's what we do. We talk about LIV. Richard Bland wins the U.S. Senior Open. So now the last two USGA championships, high-profile events, have been won by LIV players. And I'm wondering if you guys think that this kind of creates any momentum or any pressure to kind of get something done. Because at this point, we thought something, or at least we had heard, something was about to be done. Rex, let me start with you.
Jimmy, this is all about leverage, and I don't think it can be overstated, the idea that Bryson DeChambeau's victory at the U.S. Open, not only was it a victory for LIV Golf, you would already go ahead and give it in that front, but the way he engaged with the public, the way he did the media tour on Monday afterwards, the way he continued the celebration into the LIV event in Nashville the very next week, if you're the PGA Tour, if you're in those negotiations with Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, you cannot ignore that. And we had heard rumors building towards the Travelers Championship that the PGA Tour and the PIF were close to some sort of agreement, whatever that might look like. Those didn't come to fruition, and I think that's a direct result of the idea that suddenly the leverage swung in the PIF's direction, and that is a direct result of Bryson DeChambeau winning. Certainly, you look at what Richard Bland has done, not just in this championship, but also winning the senior PGA earlier this year. And now let's fast forward. Let's go to the Open Championship in a couple of weeks. Let's go to Royal Troon, and all of them, Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, John Rahm, they're all going to be among the potential favorites to win that championship. Imagine a scenario where suddenly the leverage goes completely in that direction. It puts the PGA Tour in a much more difficult position.
I completely agree with you, Rex. The PGA Tour executives cannot be happy about seeing the reigning U.S. Open champion parading around with the trophy, becoming the fan favorite that Bryson DeChambeau has become, which would have seemed unthinkable 2 or 3 years ago. It's sort of the rhetoric that was going on at the PGA Tour at that time. It certainly creates a pressure point for them. But I think, if anything, these last two major championships with the U.S. Open and now the U.S. Senior Open, won by Richard Bland, puts even more heat on the major organizations. Mike Wann of the USJ had already talked on the eve of the US Open how they were at least seriously considering carving out an automatic exemption, whether that's one, whether that's three, five, 10, to be determined, for LIV golfers. I think it's the imperative and the prerogative of these major organizations to make sure that the very best players are there. Keep in mind, Bryson DeChambeau's major exemption would have run out at the end of 2025 had he not won the US Open. That's a position that is untenable for major organizations and really is just a stain on them if they're not getting the players in their fields of that caliber.
Actually, guys, I think you can make the argument that PGA Tour executives are probably happy to see Bryson going around with the trophy because it puts pressure on the players who might be resistant to a deal to actually see that, you know, one of the most engaging guys in the game is out there with a major championship trophy. It probably helps the Jay Monahan camp in that argument. I want to end this roundtable with something a little bit more whimsical. The Kaiser family announced at the weekend another property in a far-flung place, this one near Nacogdoches, Texas. And they've also previously last year announced a new golf resort coming up in the wilds of Colorado as well. I want to get your pick. What's the most remote golf course that's number one on your list to get to? Rex?
It's not a resort, and I'm just going to echo what Jimmy said earlier in the show. Watching the Senior Open this week and seeing Newport, I would love to get the invite. I know I'm never going to get the invite, but I'm just throwing it out there. That would be number one on my list. But otherwise, I'm going to stay local. And I went immediately to Stream Song. It's just about 2 hours west of where I live in Orlando. I've been out there to play the blue course before. It was so much fun. There's the black course there. There's the red course there. Those are supposed to be special as well. And they just opened a shorter course. It was designed by Crenshaw and Crenshaw's crew, and it's called The Chain, and it's no par, it's all about walking, it's all about match play. It seems like a really, really special place, and of course I would not want to get on a plane, so it's perfect for me.
Rex, that's pathetic that you haven't been to a place that's just 2 hours away. I've never been to Big Cedar Lodge that I would love to, but the number one that's always been on my bucket list is Northern and Western Michigan. Whether it's Crystal Downs, Arcadia Bluffs, they're all top 100 courses in the world. I live in Ponte Vedra, Florida. It's 95 degrees, it's insufferably hot, it's insufferably humid. The thought of chasing the sun and sort of those endless summer days kind of harkens me back to my youth in Western New York. So I'd love to get up there. That's number one on my bucket list right now.
Listen, we're all really, really lucky. We have some connection to golf, but we also have jobs. So there. For me, there's just a million on that list, but I think at the top of that list are two places. Fisher's Island, which is off the coast of New England and New York. It's really, really close, a spectacular place. And Cabot Cliffs, another Kaiser invention up there in Nova Scotia. Those sound like really, really cool places. What about you?
Do any of you guys ever leave North America? How about Tara'iti in New Zealand? That's about as remote as we can get. And Jimmy's only a short boat ride away from Fisher's Island anyway. That's worse than Rex's Stream Song.
Why did I just know that you were going to pick something like that, you know?
I'm a global ambassador for the game. Guys, always a fun conversation. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. And if you're in the market for more conversations like this, be sure to check out the Golf Today podcast, which includes the best interviews from our show. And while you're at it, take a listen to the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. Be sure to subscribe at the Golf Channel YouTube page.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
The U.S. Senior Open concluded this morning in extra holes at Newport Country Club. That's Richard Bland. Almost ending it right there. He just needed that tap in to beat Hiroyuki Fujita on the fourth extra hole of a playoff. And that gives him his second straight Senior Major Championship, 2-for-2 in 2024, Richard Bland.
Well, on Friday, longtime club professional Frank Bensel Jr. did something at the U.S. Senior Open that had never been done. Aces on back-to-back par threes at Newport Country Club. 56 years old from Jupiter, Florida, but really White Plains, New York, we like to say if we're from White Plains. Was playing in his third senior event, the USGA confirming that it had never been done in competition. As Frank poses with his son and caddy, Hagen. Hole number four was playing 184 yards. Hole number five was playing 205. Bensel, however, wasn't around for the weekend, didn't make the cut. And there are the artifacts, the ball, and the same club, the 6-iron, I believe, that was used for both shots. There are 85,000 artifacts in the United States Golf Association's museum. And now they've got two new ones. And Frank Bensel and his trusty caddy, Hagen, 14 years old, join us now. Hey, Frank, what a day for you, huh?
Jimmy, yeah, thanks for having us. It was an incredible day. It was. It didn't start out great. I was had an early bogey, and you know it was the second round, Friday round of the Senior Open, and I was trying to have a great round to get inside the cut number, which I thought might be around two. When that ball went in on the fourth hole, that got me to one under on the day, and it was looking good there for a minute, and you know you got to feed off any positive energy you can, so that was pretty exciting. And then not long after that, another one went in, so that really kickstarted the round.
You know,
thanks too.
If Vern was on the call, if there ever was a time to utter the phrase, "In your life, have you ever seen?" Before we move on, I'm just curious, Frank. Before that round, how many aces had you had?
12 aces before that. So that was 13 and 14. And quite a few in competition. It wasn't the first time I had a hole-in-one in a tournament. And, as when something like that happens, you get a little excited, but you try not to get too excited. Because, you know, they are so rare, but a hole-in-one in a tournament is not that rare. But obviously, two in a row is, I've never seen it, and it's obviously never been done in a competition by the USGA. So it was amazing.
Now, 14, it's starting to sound very selfish here, Frank, once you start to get up to 14. But what does the drinks bill look like at the end of a round when you make two of them?
Yeah, you know, fortunately, we were in the player's hospitality tent, so the everything was on the house by the USGA, thankfully.
So you are a golf professional at Century Country Club in Purchase, New York, and what people may not know about Century is that Ben Hogan was once the pro there, and Hagen, you are just not coincidentally named Hagen, right? You know where your name came from?
Yeah, from Walter Hagen, the great golfer.
And I'm wondering, Frank, what was the motivation for that?
So my wife and I are both with a golf background, obviously. My wife's late father was Tony Amaral, who was the pro at Woodbridge Country Club. So she grew up in a golfing family. And, we wanted to have a unique name that was significant to golf. And that seemed to fit perfectly with Hagen, and we love the name, and it fits perfectly with Hagen. So,
Hagen, did you actually get to pull the club or give advice on the first hole in one or the second one, or was the old man overruling you all day?
He kind of overruled me on the first one. I did tell him to hit the seven on the first one, and it obviously wasn't. But the second one, we both did agree on the six. So
whenever you go back to school and someone asks what's the highlight of your summer going to be, I assume this is going to be the story, because it's going to be pretty hard to top this one.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty hard to top this one. This is definitely going to be up there.
Hagen, you're a golfer yourself?
Yeah. I try to play as much as I can. Love playing with him. And I'll trying to take him down.
Have you ever had a hole in one yourself?
I have not, no, but I'm sure it's coming.
Said the young man confidently.
Yeah, you gotta love the optimism.
Hey, here. Frank, I'm wondering, I'm sure your phone was blowing up. Is there a most interesting person that you've heard from?
So many people, everybody that I think I have in my contacts reached out one way or another. It was great to have, obviously, Maury Povich is a good friend.
Yep.
And he was announced. It was announced that I am the pro at his club, which was nice. Michael Block reached out and you know, congratulated me because we were teammates on the PGA Cup team, and I said I might need a consult, and he laughed at that and said, just enjoy it. But, you know, just so many people that really have known me throughout my life and then or at the clubs that I work at, and we're just so happy to see this happen and see all the attention that it's garnered for me and Hagen. So, but nothing comes to mind other than all those people that I see a lot day in and day out.
So, Frank, a hole-in-one is pretty rare. Hagen doesn't know that yet, but it is pretty rare. Back-to-back holes-in-one, even more so, but in a major tournament, you're now a trivia answer. What does that feel like?
It still sinks in for me. You know, when I go back and think about the second one going in, it really just blows my mind that could happen. You guys, you remember that fifth hole is you don't really aim at the green or the hole. So the first one I aimed right at the flag and hit a really good shot and bounced, and luckily it went in. The second one, I'm aiming right at the green and hoping that it lands softly and just trickles onto the green, which it did. And you can't really see from the tee box where the pin is located because, you know, it's such a deep green. So once it started rolling down, you know, I jokingly said, you know, okay, well, this could go in as well. And then when it went in, it was just a shock to everybody who was there.
Well, a great story. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the odds are something like 67 million to one that would happen. I'm just wondering, has got to be the highlight of your golf career?
Oh, for sure. You know, winning a tournament with your clubs is great. But this, the importance of this or the significance of something like this, you know, goes beyond that even. And I'm just happy to be a part of it. And it was such an amazing venue for a tournament. And it was a great tournament. And I watched the end of it today and saw that the playoff ended with some excitement. So just great memories for lasting a lifetime.
It's a great story, probably the highlight story of last week in the world of golf. Hagen, call us whenever you get two in a row and we'll have you back on the show back then. Thanks for spending some time with us, guys.
See you guys. Congratulations, Frank. Hagen, you too.
Here's the upcoming PGA Tour schedule this week. The John Deere Classic, then we're heading to Scotland. But Patrick Cantlay, some news this week. He has withdrawn from the John Deere Classic, according to the PGA Tour, and he's going to be replaced in the field by Russell Knox.
What a day. We had Monday golf to finish it up. Richard Bland came from three strokes back. Really just an extraordinary finish for him. Now two majors and two major starts.
And you have a guy in their 50s winning majors. You have a guy 15 years old who's playing on the PGA Tour. It really does give you the full spectrum of how long a career you can actually have in this game. Storylines never end.
Yeah, they really don't. Newport was such a special place. Eamon, good to be with you. Can
always
I come back tomorrow?
I think I can make it.